Welcome to the Best Ever You Network, celebrating our third year on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Thank you for helping us become a number one rated live show with over 1 million global listeners. Our team is on a mission to help you discover your authentic best self and bring it to the world. And now, here's our show.
And here are your hosts. I'm Elizabeth Hamilton, and we've got you, Dr. Walter, out there where you can probably actually see flowers, right?
Yeah, it's looking good. It's sunny and warm out today.
Yeah. Yeah, well, 61 inches of snow later, four snowstorms here in Maine. Four in 1 week, dumping like a foot or more at a time. I just can't even begin to tell you what the view out my kitchen window looks like. It's like the snow is creeping up through the window. It's crazy.
It makes great Instagram photos, though, right?
It does, and videos of it snowing and white out. But, you know, I've been dreaming about flowers. And I like our guest, I love to go out with my camera. She's probably a little bit better at it, but I go out with my camera when the flowers are in bloom and take pictures. And, I mean, I love flowers. And when I lived in California, my husband planted climbing rose bushes up our home and jasmine up the side of our home. And we just went out and visited, and those rose bushes up the side of the house are huge now from like 15 years ago. So very cool. But why I'm talking about flowers is because we have Elizabeth Murray with us today, and she's the author of Living Life in Full Bloom, 120 Daily Practices to Deepen Your Passion, Creativity, and Relationships. So welcome, Elizabeth. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're a gardener, an artist, all these cool things, an author. I would love to just start and find maybe some of the where you got the inspiration for writing your latest book, because it's beautiful. I've got a copy right here in front of me. Beautiful book.
Thank you. Well, for me, I've always been a gardener, and when I grew up in California, where I still live, but when I was 18, when I was 17, I was a exchange student in Japan. I met a young man from Maine, because you're in Maine, I'll tell you this, and then I moved from California to Maine to do full-time gardening. So that was one of the, instead of just being a child doing gardening, that was full-time growing our food and so on. So Maine has always been something really special to me. But gardening and art, deep nature, is what I really love and care about. And gardening is a way for me to be intimate with nature. So that has led me around the world to photograph gardens, teach, design gardens. But one thing that was very special was back in 85, I lived in Monet's garden in France and helped restore it. So every day I got to garden in the master of gardening's garden, helping restore it, bring back all the flowers, the right colors, and learn about him and his painting and creating that beauty that inspired most of his paintings. And so that has been my 30-some-year relationship of returning to Giverny every year to photograph it and to lecture and to write about Monet. So gardening and art have been with me all my life. And in my book called Living Life in Full Bloom, it's really four pathways that I want people to explore for themselves. And the pathway of the gardener to create that intimacy with nature, the pathway of the artist to expand their creativity and imagination. And then there's the pathway of the lover, which is about leading with your heart and following your passions. And then the fourth one I call the pathway of the spirit weaver, which is about bringing spirit and celebration and ceremony and blessings, gratitudes into each day. And so it is what I believe in, it is what I love, and it's the offering that I want to give. It's the medicine that I've gathered in my travels from France to the Amazon to offer. And that's why I wrote it. It's what I feel is what is needed and what I can give authentically.
Well, you know, it's really a great book, and it's got it's so inspirational and has so many, ideas and for people to grow and change and be creative and you know, maximize the relationships and their dreams and hopes. And I was looking at this gardener as one of your pathways, and you talked about ah and awe as,
yeah,
as part of an exercise. Maybe you could explain that to our listeners.
Well, that was just something that came to me. You know that feeling about awe and wonder, and when we go to, when we're outside and you might see some sparkles on a spider web, or you might see a flower that's just opening, or maybe right now you're seeing sparkles on the snow, but you get that feeling of, ah, you know, that your heart opens up, you're just in present moment, and you're in a sense of gratitude and delight with that beauty. And then there's that breath, you know, that when we come home to ourselves, come home to our bodies. And so that was an idea of being really in connection to the beauty that we see around us, that moment, and that you know, to reside in awe, to reside in that delight.
Nice.
You know, I'm a really big believer in that everybody should explore their passions and grab their camera if they want to, or grab their pen if they want to write, or do whatever without fear of being at a beginner level or whatever level you may be at, or fear of somebody saying, boy, you're really bad at that, or whatever. You know, people do that. There's a lot of naysayers and so forth. Can you help set people on a path without fear?
I think one of the antidotes to fear is curiosity, and to be just curious, even for yourself. And for me, when I teach art all the time, I teach all kinds of teaching people about, you know, to find their passions and their goals and all of that. But I'm that sense of curiosity of, wow, even me as a painter, I'll go, no, look who's showing up today. Oh, you know, I had this idea for the painting, and that's not what's coming out. Isn't that interesting? But I will say, oh, but, you know, this is who's showing up, is, you know, and that curiosity rather than judgment. And then the other thing is, if we can stay away from comparison. Sometimes years ago, I was like, Liz, why should you be a painter? You're not as good as Monet. You're never going to be as good as Monet. Why bother? And it's like, we can really, no matter what, we can compare to somebody else. Oh, my sister was better at decorating Easter eggs. I shouldn't even try. You know, whatever. It's about playfulness and seeing what will, and exploring and just trying it out. And I think that the perfection that we all get addicted to in different ways, perfection really is a killer of creativity. And one of the things we can do is to say, I just want to enjoy. I say that to myself, I'm just making joyful paintings. Just be joyful. This is presence and joyfulness. And then I won't even get cramped up thinking it has to be some kind of masterpiece. When I teach, I like to teach outside. I like to teach with lots of flowers because I think they give people energy. I like to teach with music and good food so that all the senses are awakened. So just to play, and do it with a child, you know, do it as a child.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I am getting some crazy audio. Are you hearing that at all?
Yeah.
Elizabeth, by any chance, are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm on a regular phone.
Oh, there
maybe
we go. Now I've got it. Now I've got you back. Yeah, we could. You might want to repeat the very last part of what you said, if you can, because I don't think anybody heard it.
Oh, dear. Okay.
There, now I
got you. Okay. I think that being always in curiosity and presence and that joyfulness of discovery and just allowing that creative process, rather than thinking it has to come out a certain way, I have to be able to make it good enough to sell or good enough to compare to my friend, that if we can just be in that playfulness and joy. And so a lot of times my mantra when I'm painting will be, just be in joyfulness. Make this joyful, rather than make your perspective right and make sure your colors are blended correctly. No, be in that delight. being in delight.
Well, you know, I was going to say that, you kind of mentioned about, letting go of fear by, kind of turning off your inner critic. But then you also talk about the artist's state of mind, which I thought was interesting, that a lot of times people feel they have to first do all the busy stuff of their lives, do the dishes and the bills and this and that, and as opposed to just really getting to a creative impulse.
Yes, and you know what? Especially for women. Women are the ones who usually keep the households going if they're married or have children. And so there is always, in anyone's life, but especially women, there's always way more to do. And if you put your dream, your passion, your creativity on the back burner, a lot of times it will never get eaten. It will never get used. It will go to waste. So,
amen.
Let go. Let go.
Don't need to shout that loudly as a mother of four boys over here.
Oh, bless your heart.
I'm scheduled. I mean, Walter and I were just having that conversation yesterday about various aspects of my life. I'm like, I don't know if I can do some of these shows on Sunday because I've got to do this or that or another thing, and you know, I'm constantly juggling. And when I read your book, I see all. It's just one of those books that just sparks your creativity in all these different ways. How do you suggest somebody tackles your book? Because you really could go through this and go, oh, my gosh, how am I going to find enough time to do that and that and that? And I'm loving to just sort of randomly turn the page and pick something to do each day. Is that how you?
Well, I think it's like
cool.
A seed catalog. And when we go to, here you are in Maine in full snow, and so is so many people. You look at these seed catalogs, and you go, oh, I want to grow that and that and that and that. And you realize, forget it, that's a tropical, it'll freeze. Or, no, I can't grow that, I have gophers. But we love looking at the pictures. Or some of them are, yes, I'm going to try this new thing. So, or like a smorgasbord of food, you can't eat all that food. You don't want it all on your plate. So choose, you know, with my practices, choose what really has heart and meaning to you. Or a lot of people just pick it up and let something fall open and are guided. Or sometimes we're entering February with the Valentine's Day coming. So that's a great month to think about the lover. And it doesn't mean that you have to have this big romantic lover that you are, you know, having this great romance with. It might be, and then that's so fortunate. But it's like the love within yourself, the love for the animals, the plants, the earth, the children. It's all kinds of love nature. So you might pick up something that you want to work on and maybe spend, or you want to open, or you want to seed in your life. So there's different ways. One practice, you might go, you know, that's not for me. Or another one, you might go, I can work on this my whole life. When I was trying to come up with these practices, I had so many ideas, way more than I could put in a book, and how to discern and what would be the best. So some of it is like happiness, or what do I love? To really follow what you love, to really know what you love, so that you can bring that more in your life to feed yourself.
You know, when you in your section on the lover, as you're talking about, you mentioned so many great things. One was be authentic, and another one that I liked was let in vulnerability. You know, maybe you can talk about that a little.
Well, you know what I have come to in my life is that we can't really, at least in my experience, I can't really be truly authentic unless I'm being vulnerable. Because if I'm very protected and very trying to be perfect, then I'm going to be putting on a mask and trying to look good. And do I impress you? Does this clothes look good on me? You know, rather than here who I am today. You know, this is enough. I am enough. And so that authenticity is really backed by being who we really are, which is vulnerable. And I think it pairs a lot with courage, because it takes courage to be who you really are. And one thing I love about the word courage is it comes from core, which is heart. So we have to be heart connected, and when we're heart connected, of course we're authentic, and it looks very brave when you take a stand for what you love and that's why we call it courage or bravery. So to be courageous, to be authentic, and to be vulnerable. And I think vulnerability, I used to think, oh, that's that person who cries all the time and falls apart and, you know, is wobbly. No, no, vulnerability is being willing to be open. It allows our hearts to have compassion, to listen deeply, to be authentic, not like I have to spill out my whole story and, you know, sob and make you all cry or whatever. It's just being authentically present.
Do you, I was going to ask you, were you like this when you were a kiddo? Like, did you always have a camera and you were in the garden and all these things?
Well, I got a camera when I was 12, and back then, like, that would be early 60s, it was a big deal to have a camera. And my uncle, who was a ship captain and lived in Asia, he gave me this 2 1/4 big camera, of course, with film. It's not like handing a kid a camera today. It's much more special. And he taught me how to photograph, and he'd have these exotic parties and belly dancers. And back then it was a big deal to have sushi and raw foods and to learn to photograph. And for me, it was a way to see and a way to record. And so I got into that. I loved it. And then I've always been a gardener. I've always been someone, I call it being a free-range child, you know, where you could run up in the hills and be wild rather than be all, you know, accounted for. So that my depth of time in nature really cultivated me. And always doing art, I think doing art is for me like a meditation or a way to really record what I love and what I see.
You talk about under the artist, you talk about nature as your mentor. Mm. What do you mean by that?
Well, we usually think of mentor, and I've had many mentors. I'm very rich from that. Mentors are usually people who guide us, who see us, who believe in us. And when we come to a crossroads in our life, help remind us who we really are so that we can make that strength of choice. And what I mean by that nature can be our mentor, nature has always been something obviously deeply rooted, like a tree, and something that is steady, that I can count on, that connects me to spirit, connects me to something bigger than I am, and is something I will take a warrior stand for to make sure that nature is loved and taken care of. So, and it is also the beauty way. It teaches me about beauty, and it gives me all the inspiration I need to do any kind of art or writing or gardening. It is like my muse and a mentor and a teacher. So that's a little bit what I mean.
Cool.
When you wrote this book, you wrote about 4 pathways. And I just want to remind people we're speaking with Elizabeth Murray, who is the author of Living Life in Full Bloom. And in the book, there are 4 pathways, gardener, artist, lover, and spirit weaver. And I was wondering if you could just kind of take our listeners through what each of those are, and then also is one of them more significant to you than another?
Hmm. Well, each one I love, and each one, well, gardener, I'm really, gardener could have been, you know, nature person, it could have been other things, but the gardener is the humble, you enter through the humble garden gate, and what you know in your garden becomes intimate. And what I mean by that is any of us who have had a pet, for example, you know when your little dog is sick or your cat, you know, like you have a personality, you have a relationship. So that happens when you're a gardener. Oh, those plants are dry. Oh, my goodness, that needs pruning. Oh, my goodness, something's happening there. I'm so excited about this. This is going to happen. So you begin to have a relationship. And that relationship with those plants and that earth and that weather, You can also bring to all of nature, to the woods you walk in, to the ocean, to different places. So I think gardener is really important to me, and the practices there are not just about planting seeds. They're about, you know, looking at the night sky, about becoming familiar with the rhythms of the earth. So I love that. And you can be a gardener without having a garden. It's, you can practice that pathway by walking in a park or being in wilderness or planting some things, having some indoor plants or a window box. It doesn't mean you have to grow your own food by any means. The pathway of the artist, for me, is about living a life that is creative. And creativity doesn't mean that you only are a painter or a photographer. It could be the way you get dressed, the way you think about problem solving, the way that we think about many choices that we can offer to a situation, and to have different kinds of, to be in curiosity, like we spoke up before, rather than judgment. So like we're curious about the painting that's going to happen, well, we can be curious in the town meeting about the outcome of an important decision. So it's a way of thinking and being in the world. I think it's also a way to be beautiful, to create beauty and connect with the beauty way as something that I think is very spiritual. The pathway of the lover is really about exploring what you love and standing behind it. And then I offer some practices, and it might be like forgiveness. And I use a metaphor for that, when you're watering the garden, you have a hose, and if the hose is kinked, then the water doesn't come out, and you don't realize that you're not really flowing with that water. And it's like forgiveness. If we don't forgive, we're holding back, we get uptight, we're not in the complete flow, and that could be with our love, or it could be with our relationships. And then so there's all kinds of practices, deep listening, that authenticity, that vulnerability, practices about family, all kind of children. And then the pathway of the spirit weaver is important to me because I think when we can recognize spirit in everything, spirit in each person, spirit in diversity, spirit in the trees, spirit in one another, if we can recognize and be in that gratitude or in blessings, or I love celebration and ceremony, a great toast at a party. I've been hosting some Maasai dancers and singers this last week who are here, and every night we have a dinner, and we do singing and dancing, and it's so lovely, and talking about authenticity. And so this is to be able to enjoy, bring joy into your life, rather than that numbing that often occurs when we are lonely or when we are feeling in pain or shame or, you know, and then maybe drinking or watching too much television or whatever, we numb up. So when we get to be in this joyful spirit connection and community, I think that that's a great benefit to everyone.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of similarities to your work and mine. I've written a book called Forgive to Win, and you talk about Forgive to Live, and in my book I talk about esteemable acts of service, and you talk about Dare to Serve, and these are key principles for people to be happy and healthy and, you know, and prosperous also, I believe. But under Spirit Weaver, which I thought was really awesome, there's so many great stuff in your book. It's so many. You cover so many different angles on all the things that people need to be a complete person, mind, body, and spirit. But under Spirit Weaver, you talk about the importance of activism. And that's another thing I think is really important. And maybe you could share a little bit about that.
Well, I think activism means to take a stand and to work for what you believe in. And that brings you into action. And I was just at a a meeting on Sunday, a gathering of spiritual people, and one of the speakers was talking about the three chakras of the mind that the Westerners are often in, and heart, connecting to heart, and then the middle chakra is evidently about action. And I was thinking, yeah, absolutely. If when we can connect what we love and what we believe in with our action, we can make a difference. And I think today, more than any other time in the world, each of us has this, you could call it medicine or original offerings or skills and talents that we are being asked to offer. We are being asked to teach or to share and to take a stand. To make a difference. And that's that activism. If you only think about it or you only talk about it, but you don't take that risk to really go out and make the change, then you get stymied, you get stagnant. The water is not flowing. And again, it's just like taking the action to do a drawing or a painting or to speak up or to put your voice out there. It takes self-esteem. It takes some belief in yourself, or at least a lot of courage, like we were talking about, that heart connection. So you push yourself forward and you go, you know what? I'm going to take a stand because I think there needs to be more art in the schools, or I think there has to be more diversity here, or I see that the climate is changing. I want to make a difference. I'm going to do whatever, a tree planting. I'm going to work in the Amazon. I'm going to work on more recycling or local foods or whatever the many ways that you have passion, you can take a stand and create an action. And this is also, I call it spirit weaving, because it's about reweaving community. And we are tattered on the edges, and some things have unwoven, and it's like a tapestry or an old carpet or a Patrick quilt that is starting to fall apart. So we need to get the weavers in there to do the reweaving with these, you know, beautiful, loving, golden threads that brings our fabric of our communities back together. It makes us whole. And it's about, you know, recovering and covering. And so it's, I think that taking an action, like if anyone's a gardener, I can have all these seeds, and I go, yeah, you know, I'm so excited about planting all these seeds, but you know what? I don't have time today. So maybe tomorrow, or maybe next week, or you know what? I'm just going to keep planting on it. And if I don't put my seeds in the ground, I'm not going to have those growing. It's not just an intention. And then I could put the seeds in the ground, but I didn't pay attention, so the birds ate them. Or I didn't water them, and now they all dried up. So it's taking that action and that follow-through that makes a difference, whether it's your first drawing, you're doing an exercise program, you're changing, modifying your behavior. Oh, you know what? I'm not going to drink so much wine after all, or so much sugar, or whatever it is. So I think action is really important.
Great.
To live a life in full bloom, have you encountered some thorns along the way to all the pretty flowers and roses and so forth? I mean, has anything ever happened to you, or is it just all roses and petals and greatness and all this stuff?
Tons have happened to me. And, you know, you are in the midst of dormancy, your plants. And so they are being deeply rooted underneath, you know. And a lot of times when my mom got cancer when I was 10 years old, and she was in and out of hospitals. She had mental problems. She was in and out of mental hospitals. There were six of us children. I was the one that had to cook and clean and da-da-da, and then all of us did. We all had to earn money. And she died on my 21st birthday. I married the man of my life, my art teacher from college, and he, a few months after we got married, he was diagnosed with brain cancer, and then going through his illness and his death 7.5 months after we were married. And I've had many losses. My life has been really taught a lot by death. I've had different challenges. And sometimes what I think about it is, you know, like we can think of the heart and our heart breaking open. But if you have that golden love that comes through, maybe from your loved one on the other side, maybe from your belief in God or your belief in whatever, you can fill that capacity of the heart with gold, you know, like the golden love. And so your heart can have a bigger capacity. And it's, believe me, that brings you totally into humbleness, totally into vulnerability. I used to have a lump in my throat all the time because, you know, I was always a little on the verge of tears because my heart was so wide open. But it's, yes, thorns, yes, dormancy, yes, inner depth, dormancy, those periods of not high productivity, those periods of going deep within and just believing in yourself enough that you can be rooted. That's when I do a lot of journaling and a lot of positive self-talk. You know, I love you, I believe in you, I love you, I believe in you. Keep going, keep going, keep going. You know, and what brings joy? You know, who are the friends you can count on? What are the animals or the plants or the flowers to be in your house? Or what are the rituals? What is the community, the church, the sangha, the group, the singing, the dance, whatever that brings you back home to joyfulness? Yeah, to believe, I mean, I love full bloom, but we know the rhythms of nature, full bloom, and then what happens? You go into fruit. You go, the petals drop, you have to, fruit makes seed, it makes juicy, wonderful food to eat, and then there's the rhythms of dormancy and the back and forth. So we have to believe in that in our lives, and it's not necessarily seasonal, but it is cyclical in our lives. There's periods of great growth. I'm in a growth spurt now, but I think I was a wallflower at one point, you know, quiet, more quiet. I have to be quiet, and then I can be emerged. So you have to recognize that in yourself and believe in yourself
right
in a deeper way.
Can I ask you a question right there? Is your nature to be quiet, or is your nature to be outspoken and out there and all this stuff? Because I'm curious to ask you that, because, like, with me, my nature is probably pretty quiet. You know, I'm writing, and I'm pretty quiet. And I sometimes feel like I kind of have to force myself into situations. I use this a lot. You got to kind of force yourself to be uncomfortable to grow. And I mean that literally. I have to sometimes really force myself out there to grow. Do you believe that? And do you
absolutely
do that?
Absolutely. There's a part of, and I think this is really important for us, all of us, to know our rhythms. But there's a part of me that is a hermit, and everyone says, "Oh, you are so gregarious." Well, I have to deeply water myself, and I have to be quiet time, and go within, and, you know, like pajama days where you're just in your nightgown until you know, noon or 1 o'clock, and you just drink your tea, and then you don't speak, or you really are calm, and it's very grounding. Sometimes it's gardening, you know, with your bare feet, or watering, just deeply grounding. Sometimes I would much rather be weeding than at a party. It's weird, but so there that deep.
I'm the same
within,
way. It's funny. How about
and
you,
then,
Walter? Are you like that?
You know, it's really funny. I tend to really be a homebody and kind of quiet also. But when I'm, you know, when I'm doing my thing, when I'm like talking to people or lecturing or whatever, you know, I've got incredible energy and passion.
Yeah.
But then when I'm home, it's like, hey, you know, where'd that go? Sometimes I'm just kind of really quiet and laid back. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, dichotomy.
I think it's important. I think of it like the butterfly, the chrysalis time, and then the out. I go. You know, part of me is this butterfly. I love to have the party. I love parties. I love public speaking. I love teaching, but then I also have to go within.
Yeah.
It's not one or the other, and it's, and as you were saying, Elizabeth, that respecting that sometimes it takes you some push to get yourself out there to go. You know, I really should go to that lecture or this gathering. I'm feeling kind of shy. Sometimes we have to take care of ourselves and just go, no, you don't have to go. It's like taking care of a little kid. No, you can stay home. You need that. And sometimes it takes that little kick, you know, like, okay, make the effort. And you go, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that just happened to me, literally. I haven't been to, you know, I used to be in the media and everything, and I haven't really covered an event for a really long time. You know, it's like, okay. And I went to go to the Massachusetts General Conference for Women, a huge conference,
oh.
You know, the biggest conference of its kind in Massachusetts, 10,000 people in a room or more.
Oh, my goodness.
In one thing, and I'm covering all these people and doing video and interviewing people and all this stuff, and I was so happy after that I actually went, because like 3 days leading up to it, I'm like, I don't want to go, I don't want to do this,
yeah.
I don't want to do this,
yeah.
You know, kind of thing. And my husband was like, you got to go, what are you thinking? And then I was all happy and proud, and it was this, it's one of those growth moments where you're like,
yeah.
Wow, look at all the cool people I met and the people I interviewed. And I'm wondering if you had those, if you can describe some of those moments in your life. I know you've had them too. And especially, you know, with your book and everything. This is a huge book. It's got so many pictures and writing and everything. You must feel like you've, you know, conquered the world. It's really cool.
Oh. Well, I don't feel like I've conquered the world. I did, it was 7 years, and then 4 years, 7 years of idea gathering or more.
Oh.
And then 4 years of writing and 2 years of 8 to 10 hours a day working. And I wanted each page to be beautiful, so I have drawings and my photos and things. And so it's a huge accomplishment for me, but it's very personal. It has a lot of, talking about vulnerability. So like when a neighbor read it the first time, who I don't know really well, she goes, gosh, Elizabeth, do you realize how much more I know you? Do you realize how much you wrote about yourself? I'm like, well, yeah, and I was feeling really shy. Oh, people I know, they know me better. Ooh, I really put it out there. I was really taking a risk. Oh, and taking a risk not to tell about me. It was about being vulnerable so that other people can open up. And but it's the more personal I am, the more authentic it is, and hopefully the more universal the message is. But also it makes me a lot more shy. You know, it makes, so I'm going to do this lecturing this coming year to different places all over the country. And I'm really having to curate my message, because some people say, don't say prayer. Don't mention meditation. Don't say anything about God. Don't say, like, okay, do you want me? You know, other people
say,
oh, come for the healing. Oh, we want, you know, come to talk about lifestyle as creative lifestyle. And so it's very interesting to me to kind of realize, oh, people have, oh, maybe you're a vegetarian, so I don't feed you beef stew. You know, oh, you're a vegan, I'll feed you this. So there's these different things that we can nourish one another, offer.
Well, you know, I think when you do go to different groups or which may have different agendas, you try to, you know, give an overview that sort of addresses their agenda. But there's always a way to, even if you don't use the certain buzzwords, there's always a way to get your agenda and your message authentically out there to those people. You know, I just want to say your voice is like incredible. It's healing.
Huh.
It's calming.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful voice. And talking about healing, though, because I'm a doctor and I like to talk about alternative ways of healing as opposed to medicines and surgeries. And you talk about healing through art and healing through humor. And maybe you could talk about that for a moment.
Hmm. Well, you know, I've done it with myself, because as we talked about earlier, I've had different problems in my youth and my childhood and it had ended up being me being pretty depressed at times and having to struggle with that. So humor is, in most cultures of the world, is a shapeshifter. If we're using good humor, if we're not like making fun at somebody, but it can change something and it can help you take yourself more lightly, and it can help you in that delight and curiosity. So I think humor is, I think of it as humor, humus, humility, human, you know, keeps you connected to the soil. And then, so I think it's really healing. And art as healing, the process, you know, if we can lose ourselves, when we're making art, maybe when we're watching a beautiful landscape and we're just trying to play with drawing it, not being perfect, but just losing ourselves in this enjoyment of beauty or creativity or process, then something goes away and this new healing energy can come forward. This space and time without our minds being dominated. So I think that's really healing. And when any time we can connect to spirit, we feel like there's a bigger source that can feed us and protects us and believes in us and that we have purpose and there's a reason. And then I've worked with many shamans in different indigenous cultures around the world, and I've studied this for many years. And in many earth-based healing, illness comes from being at a soul loss, being disassociated with who we really are, with our life purpose. So I think when we can connect to that, then we're reconnected to our joy and our spirit and our delight. And that's what helps us heal as well. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that through art, probably, and it's just like kind of like service to others. Also, when you get out of, when you're into the art, you get out of yourself. You get out of that ego mind, that critical mind. You get out of that part of your mind that's fearful and that's threatened, and all that stuff like affects the immune system. And when you are like in a moment of authenticity with art, and out of your ego and connected to spirit, then that's normally, I think, we're healthy. And that just opens up that hose you're talking about. You're unkinking that hose, and you're bringing healing energy in when you are really in authentic, creative, artistic space, a loving space, a humorous space. So I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And I find dance, just embodiedment, joyful embodiedment, and music that delights, or singing, even if you're not a good singer, like singing. And singing with others and moving your body, and especially being out in nature, those things are super healing too. That where you are joyfully embodied, where you're not like, oh God, I need to lose weight, oh man, I'm aging, oh, da da da, da all this judgment. It's just like, I am joyfully and gratefully here. That makes a difference for me.
All right, this next question is going to come out choppy and all over the place, but it's going to get, you guys can edit me a little bit. I notice in the book, it strikes me that you like kindergarten. I don't know why. I'm curious.
Well,
but you can explain. But I remember being in, let's just say kindergarten or first grade, like art class or music class or something like that. And I was a competitive kid, and I still am. I'm a very competitive adult. But I'm not without compassion and all those things that make you find the beauty in other people. I won't trample all over somebody to be competitive. But I can remember, like, when somebody was better at art or better at singing or better at running or, you know, all those things. How, as people, do we embrace our kindergarten selves without the comparison that we might not be as good as another person? And keep that, like, spirit alive and going. I see it in your book. From Lita Judge to, there's several kindergarten references in here, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Betty Peck, who's my, just to tell you, your listeners, that there's a second section in the book that's called Full Bloomers, and there are six stories about friends of mine who I think amplify being a full bloomer, someone who really lives those four pathways, and then how they give something forward in the world. So Betty Peck, who's one of my elders who I deeply love, she is in her mid-90s, and she's been a kindergarten teacher for more than 60 years, and now she leads this kindergarten forum. So it's that spirit of joyful curiosity and presence. And when that competition often is very addicted to excellence or perfection, and often addicted to comparison. So, am I ahead of them? You know, where are they? Where do I stand in comparison to them? And if somehow we can shift that and just be in play, then we are connected to that process and that. And Lita Judge is someone else I wrote about, and she's a wonderful children's book writer and illustrator. And she also has her deep challenges with health issues, and she is deeply connected to nature all her life. But so to create something beyond something that gives a gift to everyone and connects other people, and yet you work with your own limitations or challenges.
Well, you know, you talking about children, and you mentioned the section on in African cultures, mothers will create like a unique song for their child, and then song is something that they'll use in happiness and pain and in various throughout their whole life. And and then you say that each of us should sort of find our own song or create our own song. How would we do that?
Well, this I studied with Angelus Arian for 18 years, and that was she's a cultural anthropologist, and when she'd send us out on 12-day vision quests, that would be part of our assignment. And so the suggestion is to think of your qualities, you know, the quality you are a healer, you are a community person, you are a voice, you are in curiosity. So you would think of qualities of yourself, and then you can make, the best is to make up your own tune, your own rhythm, but you can use another song. And you mention your name at least 3 times in your song. And you mention qualities maybe you had since childhood and things that you love. And you just make up your own simple words. Some people are really good, and I actually am a really shy singer, and but as a little girl, you know, like I would sing these little songs, and when I was a babysitter, I would sing them to the babies, the children I would take care of, and so on. So you just remember these words, and it becomes your power song. It becomes your song that brings you back home. So some people might use affirmation, but a song is something that has rhythm and has your reminder. And you can sing it in your car, you can sing in your shower, you can sing it before you have a meeting, you know, that you have to get to all your confidence together. It's to bring you home to who you really are, to help you remember.
Thank you.
I love that. And I think song is so healing as well, along with all these these other creative avenues as well. We're going low on time. We've got about 10 minutes. Can you hang out with us for just a little bit more? Because I want to ask you about life mapping. I know this might be really hard to do over the radio, but this is out there on live radio, but I would love to invite you into our community to have us, to have you maybe teach us some life mapping if you ever have any time. And there's 30, Walter, how many people are in our community? 3,200 people at this point. There's a lot of people in there. And they love to embrace people in their books and our shows and everything. So can you, for start, if you ever have time, please come into our community, and we would love to do that with you. But what's life mapping? And
well,
can you explain that on the radio?
Well, I'm teaching it actually this Saturday. I have some people coming. I have 15 people or something. Life mapping is something that my good friend Duncan, who is in my book, introduced to me, and then we modified it over the years. But I practice it for myself, and it was by practicing it for myself that I came up with this book. So the first thing is to really be clear what your passions are. And for some of us, we could maybe make huge lists. Oh, I love this. I have a passion for this and this. Some people find it really difficult. They go, I don't know. I don't really know what my passions are. And they're all shy about it. Well, what do you love? Well, my children. And you start small, and it's hard for them. But to really know what your passions are, be connected. And then another part is, what are your skills and talents? What are your gifts? And again, I find mainly women will be very shy about that, and they'll not mention very many things. Oh, well, you know, I'm not really good at very many things. I said, but you were an accountant, right? You were in charge of whole business. You must know organization and math and all kinds of stuff. Oh, yeah, well, I didn't count that. Or, oh, my goodness, you're a mother of three or four boys. You must be a great cook, organizer. You must know all kinds of things. Oh, yeah, well, I didn't count that. And one of my friends was a captain of a ship. She didn't count that. She didn't count that she knows three languages. So really to know, it's like knowing what the money is in your bank. What are my assets? What are all the things I can call on that are my character, my skills, my talents, and my gifts? Music, language, art, teaching, whatever. And then what do I feel the world needs? What do they need? And we can all say big things like, yes, my God, we need peace. Yes, we need to stop global warming. Yes, we need. But what else? What is really passionate and important to you? What is your reflection of your values that the world needs? And then we create these action plans to bring the three together so that my passions and my gifts and talents are aligned with what I feel the world needs, what I want to offer. And sometimes we have to tool up. Oh, God, you know, I have to learn Lightroom for my photography or whatever. And then what is our North Star? What is going to be our guiding? What will guide us to get us back home or to help us with discernment? Oh, man, I am overwhelmed. There is so much to do. Okay, what is going to be my articulate, you know, careful, grounding focus? And I find with a lot of people I've worked with that maybe they have all these talents and all these passions, but they're all over the map, and they maybe have a really messy house. They're always running out of time. Maybe they have a weight issue, and they don't have enough money, and everything's kind of falling apart, and yet they have so many passions. So they need to learn about boundaries and discernment and clarity and bringing more depth and to kind of rope it in a bit and to focus. So it's very interesting. Some people find it very difficult to discern and to even give themselves the credit for what they love or what they know. So what this is it looks like three big circles, and we fill it in. But what comes from it is a map of direction, of a discernment. And then when I do my workshops, what I love doing, we do all kinds of little meditations, a little writing, a little assignments, and so on. But one of the things is to partner and give somebody 5 minutes after I did my life map, I tell you what I feel it is, and you deeply listen. You receive it, which is such a huge gift. And then you step in, you the listener, step into the storytelling realm, and you say, once upon a time, there was a young girl named Elizabeth. She had so much curiosity. She loved art. She loved gardens. She loved interviewing people. She was competitive but enthusiastic, and what she did in her life with these amazing skills was she grew it into a radio program, into being an author, into healing, into reweaving the world, and you grow it bigger, the dream bigger than the person would ever have the courage or the vision, and you've really listened. Then we write it down and we give it to one another, this dream, the story of what could be, and it's very powerful. And sometimes we have to talk about balance, and if we have let's say it's with time, or if it's I always run out of time. So we maybe talk about where we're at this moment, where we would like to be, and what are the actions to get there. It could be your finances, it could be your health, it could be relationships with your spouse or children or work. but that's another point of what it's just honest evaluation of a situation in your life, and then what is the outcome you want, and what are the actions you have to take. So that's part of the life mapping process, and then you know it's a map, and like any map, oh gosh, you know, I want to get to Maine, and this time I'm going to drive. Well, my goodness, I better know how to get there. I better get a map. And then I have to follow it, you know. And you can change along the way and modify and stay longer. But, you know, you have to, it's a way to find a goal.
Hey, you know, when in the Gardner part of your book, you talk about attentiveness and patience. So I'm kind of guessing that maybe in life mapping, attentiveness and patience is important too?
Yeah, very good point. Good point. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's that other great metaphor of what seeds we plant and what do we nurture. You know, is it going to be kindness? Is it going to be generosity? Is it going to be my skills? Like, I'm going to do a big show, and I want to up my skills in my drawing. I want to up to do my visions. So I'm taking a drawing class. Even though I teach drawing, I'm like, okay, I'm going to water those skills because I want to grow them. I want them better. So that's the gardener skills that we have to look at. You know, what
I like that about you. You're not afraid of mentors at all or teachers. I love that. You really embrace people teaching you things that sometimes that's one of the hardest, I think sometimes with having children, sometimes it's one of the hardest things. People are all wired differently, and even with my own four kids here, some are wired to just love teachers, and some think they know everything, and you know. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have moments of that. But I love that. Can you maybe take? We've got 3 minutes. Can you maybe take a minute and just teach us something about that? Because there's a takeaway there for sure.
Mm. Well, I'm a lifetime learner, and so again, it's that curiosity, you know. Being taught is humbling. It's very humbling. I'm taking this drawing class. I'm feeling super crappy, like really bad. Like, oh, I'm really bad. So I have to be careful of my own judgment of myself. I take a language class. I'm really bad at language. You know, I go to all these countries. So it's very humbling, and yet it makes me a better teacher. And it makes me more humble to say, oh, you got to practice. And how do I do my own self-talk so that I am, again, in curiosity, I'm really doing it. I think all of us are teachers. And when we teach, it is how we share what we love. So I don't think anyone has to be a perfect at anything to teach. It could be a very small skill, but we are all teachers. And then we can receive that teacher as well. Because, to learn is to grow. It's joy.
Yeah, there's an expression it's actually from A Course in Miracles that says we teach what we need to learn, which is also kind of an interesting perspective.
I think about that sometimes.
Yeah, it's a great way of learning.
That one gets me all, it's like talking in circles sometimes, that quote. I love that book and that quote, but sometimes if I think about that quote too much, I go round and round and round.
Well, no, but I can relate to it because, you know, for me, teaching forgiveness, it's not an easy subject, and, you know, and it's not easy to do. So as I'm teaching it, I'm reinforcing in my mind all the letting go of judgment and resentments, and really, I'm really teaching myself at the same time that I'm sharing it with others. So I do kind of get it in that context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. All right, so we both just loved having you as a guest on our show.
Thank you
for being with us. We're totally running out of time.
Thank you for your good questions. I love this. Is my favorite interview, really, sincerely.
Oh, how fun
really
is that?
Great.
Thank you. And
thank
it was
you
funny
for
we
being
were
so
talking
present and knowing my book well.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book. So everybody, Living Life in Full Bloom. 120 Daily Practices to Deepen Your Passion, Creativity, and Relationships by Elizabeth Murray, who is a lot of things, a gardener, author, photographer, teacher, mentor, learner, but just many, many things. And it's a beautiful book. It's filled with pictures and words and wisdom, And I especially love the life mapping too. I think there's some really great takeaways here. So thank you so much for teaching
us. Yeah,
this is a teaching show.
Pleasure.
One of my favorite shows too. I learned a lot. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
You too. Thanks a lot, Elizabeth. Yeah,
thank
you, Elizabeth. All right.
All
right. So boy, isn't she neat? What a fun.
Awesome. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Well, we got to go, and I know you got to go. And on Thursday, we have Jack Canfield coming on. So very excited about that. And Jack Canfield will be here at 1 p.m., I just confirmed. And next Tuesday, also, we have Randy Sutton at 1 p.m. So two really big interviews. In addition to this interview, it's a huge week for us here at Best Ever You. So we're really happy to have all these really wise people teach. This is a week of, like, teaching, isn't it, of learning?
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah. So awesome. So we're all going to grow. There you go. We're ending a beautiful show about gardening on We're All Going to Grow. All right, everybody. Thank you, and I'm going to go shovel.
No. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.